This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with Steve Crump, the pastor of the Unitarian Church here in Baton Rouge, 30 years in that capacity. And Steve Crump will share his insights about the tragedy in Connecticut, Newtown, Connecticut, last week, the site of 26 deaths at the hands of a man who was firing three weapons at young school children, 20 of whom died in his massacre. Also on the show, we'll talk with C.C. Adcock, who'll be performing at the Manship Theater Wednesday night, and Justin Martin, a biographer of Frederick Law Olmsted, one of the first abolitionists in America. Genius of Place is the book. Frederick Law Olmsted was the mastermind behind Central Park. All this, now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. With us is Steve Crump, the pastor at the Unitarian Church. He is celebrating his 30th Christmas as the pastor of the beautiful church on Goodwood Boulevard in the capital city. And the last few days, the nation and many clergy have been weighing the effect of the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, where 26 people were gunned down by a gunman who killed himself. And 20-year-old Adam Lanza has left quite a mark on our society. And many people who in the past have been advocates of gun rights to the extreme, some might think, are now calling for a new look at this issue. Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Mark Warner of Virginia, Democrats with A ratings from the National Rifle Association, both say it's time to talk about restrictions on gun sales and ownership. And then there are others. Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, who is now a commentator on Fox News, says, "We ask why there is violence in our schools, but we have systematically removed God from our schools." This was during an appearance that the former governor of Arkansas made on the Fox News channel. "Should we be surprised, so surprised, that schools would become a place of carnage?" asked Governor Huckabee. We'll start with that. What do you think, Steve Crump?
How could it not happen in this country? That's what we said 20 years ago when Yoshihito Tori was killed.
He's saying that we're a godless society. That's what Huckabee is saying.
Well, it's a perspective on human nature, I think. I guess in my ministry, and he's a minister too, and I'm not going to do partisan politics, but I do think it's an issue of public policy. Let's not try to change human nature. Let's deal with what human nature is. Let's not villainize mental health, which could possibly happen out of all of this. I know we're talking about autism and the autism spectrum now. But yes, we ought to deal with better mental health, not only in this state but across the country. But let's just look at this instance. This is what I'd say to Governor Huckabee. We have a pre-toddler on our living room floor, and on the floor are a bunch of bobby pins and exposed electrical circuits. Now, I guess we could say bobby pins and electrical circuits don't kill babies, but there is negligence if we don't cover the electrical wall outlets, etc. It's a very simple illustration, but let's not try to change the baby. Let's deal with the human nature, where we are. And it's very clear to me that 200,000, could this be right, 200,000 guns underneath the Christmas tree this year, 200,000 purchased on Black Friday, is not exactly how Huckabee, I think, would want to celebrate Jesus' birthday.
But there is nothing inherently wrong with weapons. It's how they're used and who uses them. And here's an email from Chuck Goodwin. He says, "I just can't understand these gun zealots, but we live in a state that is full of them. Thanks for your show, and I really admire the way you conduct yourself." And I'm looking for a previous one from Chuck. I think that was a response to my response, but he said he was a Vietnam veteran and is a Vietnam veteran, and that these assault weapons are not really what was designed by the framing fathers of the Constitution when they were talking about Second Amendment rights, that this has gone way beyond the visions of the framers of the Constitution. What do you say to people who say that it's an inherent right to carry a weapon of any kind if they are able to acquire them and use them?
Well, the Second Amendment has pretty much established that it's not only the military that has its right, but also individuals. But take a look at the First Amendment. I don't have the right, nor does anybody have the right, to libel someone. So the expression of free speech has its limits. And so we don't slander. Libelous behavior is something that is an actionable offense. So there are limits. The typical, we can't scream fire in a crowded theater. So there are limits to the First Amendment, and there can be limits to the Second Amendment as well. We don't need a Supreme Court test to that. We've already settled that issue. People have the right to carry arms. Isn't it interesting, though, what's going on in the state of Michigan? How do you think the governor is going to respond to the concealed gun, the carry gun law that's on his desk right now? Is he going to sign that bill that allows guns in public schools? Very interesting issue for that governor to deal with.
Well, and there are those who say that if a teacher had had a weapon or somebody else, if there had been guards at this school, that the carnage to some extent could have been avoided, and they may have a point. Chuck, he says, I'm a Vietnam veteran who carried an M18 assault rifle. It has one purpose, to kill people. I wonder why Scott Wilfong, your guest of yesterday, and his fellow NRA supporters always cite the right of the citizenry to bear arms while leaving out the reason to maintain a militia. We have a militia, the National Guard, and therefore this is not necessary any longer. So would you allow guns in your church?
No. No. It's a gun-free campus. It's a smoke-free campus. People have the right to smoke, but if you want a job at a hospital in this region, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to smoke there, and you're not going to be able to smoke on campus either. Lee Iacocca said what? 20 years ago, when he was debating the issue of passive restraints, the solution is worse than the problem. We're going to be hearing that rhetoric probably. The solution is worse than the problem. Do you know anybody who wants to remove their seat belts in their cars and the child restraints in the back seat or the... I think, according to the latest polling, we're about 6 points away from a majority on this issue of getting assault rifles out of our society, or at least restrictions on them. And I think the first target is going to be, if I may use that pun, will be the gun shows, where there is no background check whatsoever. That's going to be the area. I have a solution, by the way, for the 200,000 guns that were purchased for Christmas gifts on Black Friday.
What is that?
Anybody who's looked at Santa's list and bought the gun and it's wrapped and it's all ready to be given to whomever in a family can take it back. Just take it back. Return it. Save the receipt and say, this is not appropriate in our family. It's just, I know he said he wanted it. He told me exactly what he wanted. I've already purchased it. Save the sales ticket. Santa changed his mind. This is not how you celebrate Jesus' birth. It's a sad situation. I think we are at a tipping point here. Can you stand any more looking at the pictures of these little children? I want to save the recording for a later time, but I just cannot bear to watch those little kids. That's the tipping point. Oh, by the way, the NRA probably needs to become a church.
Why do you say that?
Well, the Second Amendment will protect them, and now the First Amendment could protect them too, because they have their implements of worship. They
you're
treat,
saying they're worshiping their weapons? Is that what you're saying?
I think there's gun worship in our country. There's a fetishism in our country. Yeah.
Well, you may be right, although I think most people who have guns in this country are law-abiding citizens who use them for the proper reasons. But there are some of these people who are consumed with weapons, men in particular, who have probably never been in a fist fight, or if they have, they've never won one. They're not in very good physical condition, and their guns are an expression of their manhood.
Maybe it's fear.
It could be. It could be.
So what is everybody afraid of?
297-5633 is your number. Steve Crump, pastor at the Unitarian Church, is our guest. HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you, sir. If news reports are correct, it was the perpetrator's mother who went through the fingerprinting, the background checks, and everything else and purchased all of these weapons that he used. And Connecticut has one of the strongest background checks and laws on the books for their state and the country. Your opinion on that, please, sir.
That was a very powerful rifle that not only he had in his trunk, but the one he carried in. And so she got it legally. That's correct. All these guns are legal. Is there any business for us to be having armor-piercing bullet machinery on our streets? I think this is it's very clear to me we are just over the top. We're just way over the top.
Gene in South Downs. Good morning, Gene. You're on the air with Steve Crump. Hi, Gene.
Hey, how you doing? I just called in to say, Steve, 20 years ago, on the 29th of December, you married my wife, Rebecca, and I, and we are still happily married, living in town.
All right. What is your question, Gene? We don't have time for this. What's your question?
I just wanted to actually make a comment. Thanks for being a good voice of reason in town.
All right. Thank you, sir. Jim on airline. Jim, good morning to you.
Hi, I've got a couple of quick ones. The first one is, can we please change the rhetoric and the phrasing a little bit? We need to dump the phrase gun control because it has flat out become too much of a hot button issue that's been co-opted by the NRA. We're not going to do away with guns. That's a protected right under the Constitution. What we can do is strengthen our current laws. We can regulate specific things about guns, the types of ammunition, the types of magazines, the types of guns that are allowed to be sold. We've got to change. What can we do to change that rhetoric?
He's right. Assault weapons with these large magazines, the Bushmasters, gun shows that have no background checks, and the military assault weapons. Let's just start there.
297-5633 is your number. Philip in Ponchatoula. Hi, Philip. You're on the air with Steve Crump.
Yeah, I see our country as a place where we love violence. It saturates our entertainment industry. Quentin Tarantino is going to come out with another gore-filled movie, and it's going to do very well and make him richer than he is. So we get vicarious delight out of violence, and yet we're aghast when it happens in reality. I think that's a contradiction.
Well, Senator Joe Lieberman from Connecticut says that producers of violent movies, thank you, Philip, by the way, and video games must be asked to tone it down. He characterizes violence in entertainment as a causative factor that may lead to tragic incidents such as the one in Newtown, Connecticut. We'll talk more with the Reverend Steve Crump, and we invite your participation. The number is 877-217-5757, locally 297-5633, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Back after this one-minute pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Another segment with Steve Crump, pastor of the Unitarian Church. Last Saturday, after the tragedy in Connecticut, a vigil was held at his church in which many people showed and expressed their condolences and their concern about what's going on in Connecticut and across this land. E.J. Dionne Jr., the columnist from the Washington Post, whose words appear often in the Baton Rouge Advocate in today's column, says if Congress does not act this time, we can deem it as totally bought and paid for by the representatives of gun manufacturers, gun dealers, and their very well compensated apologists. And by the way, there have been precious few members of the Louisiana delegation who have commented about this tragedy in Connecticut. One of them is Mary Landrieu, and I think Steve Scalise issued a statement, but So far, silence from the Louisiana delegation. The gun lobby is probably the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill.
Yes, people cower around them. You would think anyone who went to medical school and now is serving our country might speak out on the issue of public policy. Maybe you could give some of them a call, too.
Well, we've got three members of the medical community who are members of Congress in Louisiana.
There you go.
And yeah, I don't know that any of the three have said anything about this.
I'll make a prediction.
Yes?
They will.
What will they say?
They're going to say, we've discovered a backbone, or they're going to change the rhetoric, and they'll be voting for this. I think we've been on the air how long now? 20 minutes. Okay. I think the polling is now about 48% in the right direction on this. We cannot bear to look at those kids. That's what did it. That's what did it. It may well be a tipping point, although it's possible, like all the other tragedies, we go to sleep and there'll be something else that takes our attention. The Churchill was right about our country.
In what way?
America always does the right thing after it tries everything else.
Well, there are some who believe that this is not the right course of action to disarm our society. Is that what you're calling for?
It's not a debate today about the Second Amendment. That's been settled by the U.S. Supreme Court. That's not what this is about.
So you're saying that people with arms like police officers and law-abiding citizens and people without mental conditions, they're fine as long as they're not carrying assault weapons. What about these vests? Why would somebody need a flak jacket?
I know it boggles the mind. It boggles the mind. Military police officers, I think we're going to be hearing from, if not police officers and police chiefs and captains around the country, we surely will start hearing from the families of those people.
Well, I have an appreciation for people who hunt and like to fire weapons. They're fun and at times, they're appropriate for use, for safety, and for other reasons. But most people would be a lot better suited to go to a gym and work out rather than go to a firing range.
Thank you.
Andrew on Highland. Good morning, Andrew. You're on the air with Steve Crump.
Any change in any laws concerning guns is going to change the outcome of what we experienced last week. I just don't understand at all how you will keep an individual from acquiring a gun, any gun, and going out and doing harm like that. That is my problem. We always try to fix something that maybe can't be fixed, and you want to minimize it. I understand that by keeping assault weapons or whatever you want to call them out of the hands of anybody who might do this. But I don't know how you stop an individual. The guy could put together a homemade bomb and do just as much damage if he wanted to. So how you stop someone from doing something horrible is a dilemma that I don't think we could solve. That's it.
Thank you, Andrew. Steve?
Lee Iacocca said the only perfectly safe car is the one in the museum. But you see today, that's some 30 years ago. Lee Iacocca changed his mind, too. And I actually admired the guy because he was quite innovative, and he led a fine car company, and they're still building good cars. But you see no movement today, no movement whatsoever to remove passive restraints and seat belts. And, yes, it's a restriction on our freedom. And, yes, it doesn't prevent all horrible fatalities on the highway. That's true. But we've got to start somewhere. This is idiocy. Industrialized nations have discovered it, and look at America, and they say, what is up with that country that we admire so? Just we're not going to be able to cover all the electrical wall sockets. Of course not. And there are horrible things that happen to kids, but this is just idiocy. And again, maybe in a month or so we'll all forget it.
Now, Gerald Ford, when he was president for the 2 years he was in the Oval Office, he was twice the target of assassination attempts by women, unsuccessful. But most of the time, and in almost all of these mass murders, men, mm-hmm. and young men in particular, mm-hmm. are involved. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's the case?
It is a pattern, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Isolated, white males, young. In almost every case, mental disorder, okay? And so, are we going to make mental illness an evil? I hope not. I hope we're not going in that direction. I think we deal with human nature with where it is and remove the implements of destruction that are around such people. For example, if you have someone who is chronically depressed, seriously depressed in a home, why would you have a weapon? Why would you have a gun in your home? It's a very good question, and mental health experts, far wiser than I, ask that question constantly in counseling. Keep your home safe. Why would you do that? And there are high incidences of suicide from weapons that have been in the home.
Francis in Lafayette. Good morning, Francis.
Yes. So your solution essentially is to take guns and all kind of tools away from everyone, since knives are used to commit suicides, and since automatic guns that have multiple rounds, that's been used. That's the solution, is to remove it from all the homes everywhere, and that's your idea of making environment safe. This is about feelings. As long as we're a free society, people are going to be abused everywhere we go. Everywhere you turn, this is going to happen. It's regrettable, but in free society, that's what you have. And the reason why we're a free society is because people are afraid to invade our land. Governments are afraid of their people. That's the reason why we have the right to bear arms, to defend ourselves against the central government. If you read your history, if you know anything about history, you'll understand that the Second Amendment was given to us as a result of the suppression of the Scots, who had suffered their weapons taken from them in the early 1700s, and these people fled from Scotland because their lives in the Highlands were thwarted.
All right, go ahead. Thank you, Francis.
Notice the intensity. I don't know that I can match his feeling and intensity. That's why I call it a religion. Let's not put guns before God. I'm a monotheist, so let's not put guns before God. But here's the question. When will we have enough guns? And the caller, and I don't think it's a misrepresentation. That's what I'm hearing. What's the answer to the question, when will we have enough guns? The answer is, when we have enough guns.
Andre and Gonzalez. Hi, Andre. You're on with Reverend Crump.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. To all those who are saying that guns are tools, or that this massacre could have been done with any other weapon, guns have brought a level of efficiency to killing that no other weapon really has. And the ease of access to guns, and just the easiness in which it is to pull out a gun and pull the trigger and end someone's life, I don't see any reason why we need to make that an acceptable thing in society. Why do we need to make that as easy as possible to get into the hands of anyone? Why does anyone need an automatic assault rifle? I just don't understand that.
All right. Thank you, Andre. William on Jefferson Highway. Hi, William. You're on.
Hi. I'd just like to comment in opposition to that idea that guns somehow protect us from tyranny. That is a total anachronism. That may have been true in the 18th century, but now the only real check on tyranny is democracy and civic education. Mm-hmm. More guns will actually bring more police, and if you want a police state, just have guns everywhere, and then you'll have to have police everywhere. So I think the idea of going back to some sort of mythical bonanza where, you know, only good people have guns or only good people prevail is a myth and a joke.
All right, thank you. Steve?
I wanted to bring up the question of free will in all of this, too, and where God is in this, and the question that I asked the congregation on Sunday. The question I had was, notice, Jim, you were very careful in talking about the deaths in Newtown, and you are you. That's the way you report. That's the way you are. You reported the number of kids and the adults, and then you added the shooter himself who committed suicide. It's hard to talk about that guy, but he is, too, part of the society that created him. This was available through his mother. And then you have to ask the question, why did she have all this stuff?
Why did she train him to be an effective shooter?
And Newtown has a shadow. Just it's an American city, yes, but American lives with the shadow. The shooting ranges, so do they not also like their guns in that town? That's an issue that we don't need to ask them right now in all of their mourning, but it's a question that we ask our city where we live. This is not a city versus rural discussion. This is an American discussion. But I want to get to the question, if we have time, about where is God in all of this.
Okay, and we will. Betty in Mid-City. Hi, Betty. You're on with Reverend Crump.
Good morning, Reverend Crump, and thank you, Jim, for taking my call. Thank you for continuing to keep this discussion alive. The word of the Lord says, let a man look inside himself and see where he stands. And if any man can stand and truly say that he can use a weapon that would shoot off 135 rounds at a time, he's not looking to protect himself. He's looking to destroy something. And that says a lot to me. Even our policemen, I think, with all that we hear in the news of the, rapid response to certain situations that wasn't called for, the cops can't protect us because they're too busy defending themselves. So what does that person have in their car? Do they have a weapon of destruction that will wipe all of us out? You know, that those type of weapons belong with the people who are here to protect us, the army, the police, and not with the civil society. It's no longer civil here. It has become an unruly society.
Thank you, Betty. Ann on Segan Lane. Hi, Ann. You're on with Reverend Crump.
Yes, good morning. Reverend Crump, what do you see as a solution here in our own backyard here in Baton Rouge in regard to the high murder rate among young males?
I think there is benign neglect of communities where young males are getting killed. I noticed that in my neighborhood, and I just have taken it for granted, the streets are lit. I notice in other areas, streets just aren't lit. It's just not safe to even walk down some streets. Why not put up cameras all up and down streets, at least to monitor for the sake of safety, where those neighborhoods say, we would like to see the coming and going of automobiles on our street. We vote, we vow to have those cameras there to see who's coming in and out so we can stop this needless killing. It's a very interesting question because young African Americans don't make the headlines that this story is making.
Bill on Harold's Ferry. Hi, Bill. You're on with Reverend Crump.
Now, this was obviously a horrible disaster in Connecticut, but I just wonder, last Friday, how many children were killed, were aborted all over the nation?
Well, it is a pro-life issue, isn't it? So now all those who are pro-choice, pro-life, not that they haven't come together in lots of ways before, in very positive ways. This is a family values issue. This is a public policy issue. So let's save those. Let's try to save more angels who are trying to just live in a sanctuary in their schools. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Trudy on Goodwood. Hi, Trudy. You're on the air with Reverend Crump.
Oh, yes. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I think this is the only nation that is actually drowning in guns. And sometimes I reflect that when Americans love their children more than they love their beloved guns, perhaps then we can see a glimmer of hope at the end of this terrible, terrible darkness. Thanks for taking my call.
There is a carpet in the Oval Office, and among other sayings and quotations is this one: the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. Actually, the original source of that is Theodore Parker, a Unitarian. Martin Luther King pulled that several times, and so did Obama. The arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice.
I thought Martin Luther King wrote that.
Well, he put it in his he put it in several sermons, but the original source is Theodore Parker.
It is a great
it's great,
great line.
Yep.
Here are some emails that I'll go to, and there have been a few, as you can imagine, and we'll try to get to a few of you. Nicholas on Nicholson says, how does the carnage of Newtown relate to a supreme being that loves us very much?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I've been listening to what clergy have been saying on the airwaves, and there was one who just boxed himself in a corner, and he's a very intelligent guy, and I know he's I can't imagine he's not compassionate, but he boxed himself into a corner on this very issue of where was God, why didn't God save those children? It's an old, old question. Where was God in the Holocaust? I look to Judaism actually for an answer, because I think a couple thousand years of theology, at least 1,900 years of Christian theology, has kind of messed up that question. So if God is a loving God, or if God, let's just say God is all-powerful, why didn't God prevent these horrible things, these perfect angels, these little kids? And so there is a dominant theology in the land, and that says that God is all-powerful. Well, if God is all-powerful, then why didn't God intervene? I think the issue here is free will. Either free will is a gift, and it's free will, or it's not. It's just totally conditional. I think free will is a gift, and God cannot keep our fingers off of blowing up the planet. As much as God would suffer in such a destruction of the planet or one another, I think God does cry with all those who mourned as bodies were taken out of the prison camps of World War II, etc. So it's that question of free will and where is God in all of this. I think it is up to us, and I think we have a brain that has evolved. And we are, and it's really Jeffersonian's idea, a deist who said, now it's yours. God created, stepped aside, now it's yours to create the laws to regulate yourselves properly, rationally.
297-5633. We'll visit with C.C. Adcock in our remaining segment, and we'll also talk a bit more with Steve Crump, pastor at the Unitarian Church, 30 years, and we will get his take. More of it on what happened in Connecticut last Friday as 26 people were killed. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Kevin Gallagher producing in a few more minutes with Steve Crump, pastor at the Unitarian Church in Baton Rouge. Deborah Davitt says, has Reverend Crump ever served in the military, law enforcement, hunted, or been the victim of a violent crime?
No. I went into the clergy. My dad already knew. He was wasting his time trying to show me how to use something like that. I do have sportsmen and women in the congregation, and they find this NRA stuff just kind of a good many of them find it just ridiculous that they don't want to even be in their company. Why is a military assault rifle used in hunting? I don't know anybody who uses it. That's not what they're using. That's not the sports people I talk to don't use that kind of stuff. It's over the top.
Sam Irwin writes, people say they need guns to protect themselves. Why do they need to protect themselves? Because people have guns. There is a culture of fear out there. Mm. Where did it come from?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that Americans are any more evil or any more fearful, but I think we do have a kind of cult. There's kind of a worship that goes on here. And we'll do the right thing eventually, I think we may be at a tipping point. If you asked me 3 days ago, I would have said, "Oh no, we'll just let this be forgotten too, like Portland and Oak Creek and Aurora and Tucson and Fort Hood and Virginia Tech and Columbine. We'll just let this go." I think this probably is different. I think something is actually going to come of this in terms of public policy, on a limited basis. But Feinstein's bill will be interesting reading, and I think she will get support probably in the Senate. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Joe Scarborough, the former GOP congressman from Florida, now the host on his show on MSNBC, says the Newtown killings have changed his mind about gun control.
Wow. All right, so now we're at 51%. The numbers are changing as we speak.
Oh, well.
All it takes is 51.
You know how these things go, though. A week later, people may be back to their old ways of thinking.
That's what I said 3 days ago. I said, then there will be an alarm clock, and we'll all wake up, oh, isn't it awful, and tisk, tisk, and oh, my, those sick people, evil people out there, and then we all go back to original business.
Here's an interesting question from Katie. She asks if the American media are more enthralled with this tragedy than others because it occurred in Connecticut rather than a place like Louisiana.
That's a very good point. I thought about that this morning as well, because maybe there is there's some prejudice towards the South, do you think, in this country? And what if the assailant had been, what if he had an Arab name? How would the story have played out? This is the American boy next door. This is the mother next door. We heard this. People who live right next door, she's just like just a regular housewife. She, you know, did this, and she was told us about Christmas and all. There's a shadow side of our culture, and we're going to deal with it. We are having a conversation. Even the people who are engaged in this on the other side of the issue, who think my ideas are just a quick fix, they aren't going to fix this. We're now having a conversation, and politicians are going to get a backbone out of this.
Well, we'll talk more about the Baton Rouge angle on this tomorrow, but gun violence certainly is a relevant topic in this community.
It is. I asked congregation Sunday about the issue of forgiveness. I can't imagine any of the colleagues I work with, deal with in the Interfaith Federation or Together Baton Rouge, who would not do the funeral of the assailant and his mother. But the question is, would the congregants show up? And that's the question I asked the congregation of the Unitarian Church on Sunday, and it was rather provocative. I didn't mean to pin their ears back so or in the Christmas holidays, but it is a question. That brother and the father of the assailant need a funeral, and we know what the Amish community did. Immediately they went to the assailant at Nickel Mines when those six girls were killed and said, "We forgive you because our tradition tells you we must." That doesn't mean we like any of this business. Doesn't mean we necessarily like you, but are the teachings of the Christian scripture tell us we must forgive, and that's why we're here. And so that's the question for our congregation. Can we move into healing?
Well, the Christmas season is put in a different perspective this year as a result of this.
Well, that's why I said if you've got a gun underneath a Christmas tree, just return it. You've got 6 days to do it. With the sales ticket. And if the clerk or the
any
manager...
Any gun?
Yeah. it's just not appropriate way of honoring Jesus' birth. It isn't. King Herod, does King Herod get to, quote, slaughter the innocents at the Christmas pageants? I don't think so. But you won't see that in any Christmas pageant. So take the guns back, people. Just take them back with your sales ticket. And if the manager or the sales clerk says we don't have a refund policy, then buy stock in the company and show up at the stockholders' meeting. You'll get your money back.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not being flippant in saying this, but if I were to have a guest other than you, perhaps the man who was sitting in that chair yesterday, he might have said something like, if Jesus had had a gun, he wouldn't have been crucified.
I think he had a lot of people who were wanting to stage an armed insurrection, and it history does say what happened in the year 60 when the temple was destroyed. I think the Roman Empire was far too great.
All right. Well, thank you, Steve Crump. Good to visit with you. Happy holidays. And let's go now to our next guest. Our guest at this time is Charles Clinton Adcock, better known as C.C. Adcock. Native of Lafayette, Grammy-nominated music and film producer, and coming to the Manship Theater Wednesday night with his swamp pop supergroup, Little Band of Gold. Good morning.
Hey, Jim. How you doing, bro?
Doing well. And how is it out there on the road these days?
Oh, it's all right. Somewhere on I-10 on the other side of the basin. Everything's good. How's everything in Baton Rouge?
We're doing fine. We're looking forward to your arrival Wednesday night at the Manship Theater. And you signed your first record contract, what, about 20 years ago now, huh?
Yep, it's been a little while. Plenty of lessons learned since.
And you're
been doing it, making music for a long time. Always tried to make it back home, and been living in Lafayette my whole life. Not always there a lot, but certainly am whenever we're doing the Band of Gold and hanging out with all the old heroes. Looking forward to getting back into Baton Rouge. I'm glad we get to play there so often. It's we've developed a nice little family there. It's cool.
Still a young man is C.C. Adcock. He just crossed the age of 40, born the same year as Governor Bobby Jindal. And, and you have brought...
I dance better.
Yeah, I think you might sing a bit better, too. But you brought a lot of attention, even more than been bestowed on your genre for many years, and swamp pop has taken a new turn with Little Band of Gold.
Yeah, I think when you have all the godfathers and originators of the style, we have Tommy McLean going to play with us on Wednesday night, as well as Warren Storm, Little Buck's coming. Not really a swamp pop guy, but certainly swampy, and will pop you with a guitar leg. But I think when you have all those kind of cats with you, it's cool to try to write the next chapter. They still got so much in them, and we're still making new music and writing new music, and still, it's still all unfolding. So that's what we try to do with the Band of Gold, and I think people dig it. But this show tomorrow night, I have to tell you, we're kind of proud of it. It's goofy, but it's our Little Band of Gold Swamp Pop Christmas pageant. So we'll play some of the things that you know us for, and some songs from our record, and some of the old hits from the jukebox, but it's a Christmas show. It's all tailored with Christmas songs. Some of it's kind of racy. I've got a big old stack of weird Christmas records that we're going to do. Little Buck's bringing some soul Christmas classics. Warren and the boys everyone's ponied up with some great ideas and some great songs. And it's going to be festive, stage all decorated, and get everybody in the Christmas spirit. I mean, it's not Broadway, but maybe alleyway.
Yeah, it's close enough.
Like it. Yeah, but it'll get everybody in the spirit. So we'll do the swamp pop and the Christmas stuff tomorrow night.
7:30 at the Manship Theater Wednesday night, the Band of Gold Christmas pageant. Kevin, let's take a listen to Little Band of Gold and some of the fine music that Mr. C.C. Adcock has produced over the last few years.
Oh.
So you never, never be a
singer, songwriter. Swamp Fox, Swamp Pop specialist, Supreme, C.C. Adcock. We've discussed since your first record contract, but your songs have also been featured in several motion pictures.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's great these days. There's a lot happening around Louisiana. Sometimes it comes from the films that are being made around town. But yeah, I've done a lot of, you know, I got a call years back to do this redneck vampire show called True Blood, which ended up being a big hit. Of course, being a redneck vampire wasn't a stretch for me and the gang. So we just got right in on it and tried to make some music for him. I've done that and done music for some motion pictures. Worked with the great Oscar-winning Billy Friedkin last year on his Killer Joe, which was cool to get a master class from a great director. So I like doing film for music for film. I think growing up in Louisiana, so many stories, and it's a pretty dramatic place, just the way people live and talk and the way the land looks. So I think it's easy to put music to film.
When did you first start playing the guitar?
On Cherrydale Avenue, right there near South Downs off of Perkins. My dad was going to school at LSU, and I remember it was the mid-70s. Then some old hippies that were living across the street. I don't know why my parents let me go over there and hang out with them every afternoon, but they would sit on the front porch of the rent house and play guitar and strum guitars, and I'd come home and I'd strum tennis rackets and brooms and all sorts of stuff. So Mr. Johnny DeGravel, I remember many people might know him there in Baton Rouge. He was a friend of my parents, and Mr. Johnny loaned my parents a guitar. They came home from a party one night with one, and I was so happy. I was about 7 years old.
Wow, 7 years old on Cherrydale Avenue in Baton Rouge. How long did you live here?
We moved to Lafayette. I mean, my mother was from Church Point, and my dad was from North Louisiana, and so he was just in school there. But we moved to Lafayette. We moved to Lafayette when I was about 9 or 10. So, you know, I was regularly hanging out at the Kingfish listening to Slim Harpo when I was 8 or 9. Or at least being dropped off the run and get my dad out of there.
The Kingfish wasn't far away from Cherrydale, was it?
No, exactly. I actually do remember being parked outside my mom fuming. Go get him out of there.
Well, I'm sure she thinks of those times now. That's what made you the man you are.
Well, some of it creeped in. I like every time I get to the Lobdell exit there, traveling east or west, I get a little tug in my heart for some Slim Harpo, but I love Baton Rouge and love John Fred. My mother went to LSU as well, and big John Fred fans, and grew up with those records too, and certainly Lazy Lester and Buddy Guy and all the great stuff that's come from Baton Rouge.
I think the last time we talked with you on this show was 3 years ago. You produced the documentary Promised Land.
Yeah.
Swamp Pop Germany. How was that one was received?
Well, it's been received well. I mean, I think it tugs on people's hearts. People around here love it. I hear people watch it, return to it and watch it over again because it's a nice postcard from home. We toured around with it. It's been a great way to introduce the music to the band. I mean, you know, it's hard even in Louisiana to explain what the Band of Gold is. You know, there's a lot of characters in it. Steve Riley and his Cajun accordion and all the guys in the horn section, Dickie Landry, who just had a show at the Manship and who did a solo saxophone show at the Guggenheim, who's an avant-garde jazz man. He's in the band, and Tommy and Warren and Little Buck and me. I mean, it's hard to explain. So the movie just helps, I think, people just get their head wrapped around it. And then you can hit them with the music. Not that you should have to explain music. You should just feel it. Mm-hmm. But I think the movie's done as well in helping just get the word out you know, these days people need to sort of categorize things, so I guess we'll use the swamp pop term. We just like to call it South Louisiana music, though, but yeah, it's been good.
All right. Well, tomorrow night, the 19th, Little Band of Gold, Christmas pageant with C.C. Adcock, Warren Storm, and the whole gang at the Manship Theater. So we look forward to seeing you, and have a good trip to Baton Rouge, your old stomping grounds for the swamp pop hero, C.C. Adcock.
All right, Jim, thank you. We're going to put you in the spirit tomorrow night.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
Sir.
And as we round out today's show, we'll note that tomorrow on this program, we're slated to hear from the commentator on MSNBC, Chris Matthews. He's scheduled to be one of our guests, and also Joel Boy of the Metro Council. and he has some thoughts about violence in Baton Rouge. Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times wrote this week that more Americans die in gun homicides and suicides in 6 months than have died in the last 25 years in every terrorist attack and the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. So it is a topic that is worthy of discussion and has been intensified by the carnage in Connecticut last Friday, in which 20 school children were taken away and killed brutally by a 20-year-old mass murderer, Adam Lanza. And this story will live with us for a very long time, and as Steve Crump, the pastor of the Unitarian Church here in Baton Rouge, noted a few moments ago, there may be some action on the congressional side now regarding availability of guns and the kinds of guns that people can purchase, and perhaps some regulations at these gun shows, which are quite prevalent in this area. And it will be interesting to see in the coming days if the three medical doctors in the Louisiana congressional delegation, Bill Cassidy, Baton Rouge, John Fleming of Shreveport, and Charles Bustani in Lafayette, if they will comment at all, either pro or con, regarding the state of gun regulation in America. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Inkster. And by the way, Justin Martin, the biographer of Frederick Law Olmsted, should be with us sometime very soon. He graciously stepped aside today. But until tomorrow, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.